Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Hello, I'm Jack. Just to give you guys a little bit of sort of who I am and why I'm talking to you today. So my background, I actually started as sort of a business analyst, a technical project manager. And then I transitioned across into products when I realized that that was where the action was. And so I moved across from Tesco doing, you know, working very closely with technical teams, doing big waterfall delivery processes, into DMC, which was more of a tech startup world in Agile and doing sprints and Kanban and Scrum master work. And so it was a complete transition. A big difference in terms of the mentality and the way that we approached being very quick and very dynamic. And progressed through that company, went into Easy Roommate, which has been rebranded as RoomGo, and became, you know, moved up to be head of product. In the last couple of years, I've actually moved across to the dark side. I've gone into the business side of things, became the GM and ultimately the MD of the business. And to give you an idea, so RoomGo is a flat sharing platform. So it's in 35 countries, 12 different brands, 7 different languages. And at any given time, there's about between 350 to 500,000 active users on the platform. So it's a fairly large scale service. It's unusual for a product person to move into the MD role purely because it's normally a very commercial position. But what the business was looking to do was a really aggressive product roadmap of bringing their service up to be something really competitive in the space. And that's why I stepped in to do that role. But really, I've remained a product person to the core. But it's given me a very interesting insight into actually, okay, going over to the business side and interfacing into product people and managing a set of product managers, looking at the way that they approach KPIs, the way they communicate them, the way that they approach projects, and the questions that I then bring to them, it's quite a unique insight. And so what I wanted to do with you all is just look at the actual practical application of product KPIs and how you approach measuring projects in the real world. Looking at some of those common mistakes that it's very easy to fall into. I've made them myself, and I still make them sometimes, although I try not to. And then looking at the power of product KPIs in terms of when you're communicating out to the wider business, when you're bringing people with you on your journey, because that product role is so integral to the wider operations of the business. So, where does product fit in? Now, hopefully everybody is quite familiar with something like this. It is your sort of your classic where product fits into the business operation. I just wanted to start with it purely because we tend to take it for granted as product managers that everybody has the same holistic view that we have of what is going on the business. And the reason that product is such a diverse area is because you do interface into all areas of the business. And it requires a lot of collaboration, a lot of spinning plates and facilitating, you know, different verticals within the business to function. And we tend to forget that often, you know, teams are working in silos, departments aren't necessarily understanding the implications of what they are doing on the wider business. So when we wear that product hat, there's a sort of a basic approach that nearly every product person takes to saying, okay, right, we have a challenge or an opportunity that is in place. Say, right, what are the business drivers? Okay, a department might come and say, we have a problem that we need to solve, or we think there is an opportunity somewhere, whether that is product-led or by a different department. And so the first thing to do is to understand their drivers and then work backwards from there on a sort of root cause analysis to say, well, why do you think this opportunity is there? Why do you think that you have this problem, whatever that problem may be, and go through the traceability metrics of saying, well, where does that problem actually originate? Because I can go and I can patch that for you, but actually maybe the leak is just going to spring up somewhere else. And you can rush around as a product person being very, very busy fixing what you see if you jump too quickly to the solution and too quickly try and say, right, I've come up with an idea, let's fix it. So you need to go back through to say, where is the core issue in play? Always consider the user, and we'll come on to talk about how we how we include that user feedback and that user requirement into the thought process. And you must do all of this before you think about a solution. At the point of that solution, it may be that your problem has been requested by the support team, but your solution could be somewhere completely different. So that collaboration and the communication has to come from the product team and has to be very clear. So to take a really simplistic example, your support team may come to you and say, we have a buy and sell website and our moderation team is spending way too much time manually checking every listing and correcting a problem that is, you know, that is repeating on that content. It's costing us lots of money, taking lots of time, let's fix it. The temptation is always to rush in and say, right, well, I'm going to build you a moderation tool. It's going to be able to bulk moderate everything. You're going to be able to intelligently find all of the listings. Let's look at AI. Let's pull the dev team in, and you build this great big project around a very simple problem. So how do we apply that mentality and that sort of holistic view onto KPIs? So KPIs, they exist at every level in the business. And it definitely doesn't look like this, but the idea being that you have your big picture strategic KPIs that tend to be very slow moving, very high level, looking at the kind of, you know, at the top level we're talking things like brand penetration, share of voice, revenue bottom line of the business, and these, they don't fluctuate that much. Then within that, you've got your project level KPIs of what is the roadmap that you're trying to achieve. It may be 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. That roadmap tends to be broken down into projects. Within any project, there may be your MVP spiking out simplistic trial products, putting them in short term, maybe using feature toggles to turn things on and off in different markets, all the way down to A/B tests, and even, you know, within more sort of the front end and the marketing UI UX, looking at the assets, looking at the copy, playing around with price points on the business side. And it's not always in the product manager's control what is happening, because we don't have the product ourselves. We tend to think, I'm the product manager, it's a product, I have autonomy and control of everything that is going, but the reality couldn't be further from the truth. The reality tends to look a little bit like that. You have multiples of everything. Everything overlaps everything. You touch one thing, something else breaks. It is the bane of a product manager's life. There is no logical linear narrative to KPIs. At some point, it's like grabbing the door of a moving car. You just need to find a logical set of metrics that you are going to be able to try and control over the period of whatever the changes that you're trying to make. Plan ahead of time, during and after. So KPIs have to be taken with some pinch of salt, because there's always going to have to be a point where you infer learning. And your generic basic theory is state and agree the business goals, obviously. I mean, I don't expect any of this to be new to anybody, but state and agree the business goals. Insert the why. Always, as a product person, you need to start with why are you trying to do this? You may have a problem, but actually, it's something else. What is it that you're trying to achieve? What are the measurable KPIs? And those KPIs, they can be qualitative. They can be quantitative. Your quantitative KPIs are the easy ones that you can go to the business and say, it has worked because I can demonstrate a shift from one place to another. But if you don't factor in the qualitative, have we actually made it better for the user? Is the user happier? Is the end goal of what we set out to try and achieve resonating with the users, or have we simply sort of neglected them and just rushed something through? So go back to that car, posting a car on a buy and sell website. The problem may be, or the goal may be, we want to moderate listings faster, but the actual root cause of that is we want to make our posting form more efficient. As a user, it's really painful because I am posting my car. I have to wait whilst my listing sits in a huge backlog that the moderation team need to get to, and then they make all sorts of changes to it because I didn't understand the fields correctly on that posting form. And okay, you might have whizzed me through this process much more quickly now, but the mechanism to get me there was to strip out loads of stuff from the posting form and make it really, really short. So Is that actually better? Well, no, because I now can't put all of the information I want to post about my car. People can't search against the right filters to find what they're looking for. So actually, on the qualitative end of the spectrum, nothing has improved. If anything, you've made it worse. And then you look at employing leading and lagging indicators. So leading and lagging indicators is around, in the build-up to making any change, what is our readiness for change? Leading indicators may be that we are fixing the bugs on the platform and we are getting ourselves progressively more and more ready to make a change versus just rushing out and doing it. Your lagging indicators may be things like, okay, we made that change. We need to record it. We need to say when we did it, what it was, how it changed things, so that down the line, when we're making more changes, and we say, now what happened back then at the end of May? What is it that we did that we're now seeing some sort of compound impact from? And with each additional change, you don't want to be celebrating a change five changes down the line that you made because you didn't actually look at your lagging indicators that are sweeping up behind you and making sure that everything you're doing is progressively moving you forward. I skip benchmarking trend data, but trend data, you have to consider what what's happening in your market. Are we running towards a bank holiday? Or is something happening in a market for Roomgo in 35 countries? I don't know when the bank holidays are in Brazil. I don't know if they are going to have a national day in Australia. But you need to be looking at the trends in that market, what happened over this range of dates last year, the year before. Are we happy that the period of time that we are going to make this change over is going to be relatively stable? And if we're on an upward trend, well then what's good going to look like? Is it the same trend plus 5%, 10%? Or actually are we on a decline? And therefore even just leveling out and not getting any worse is better than currently what we would do if we didn't affect this change. So again, trends, it helps to quantify what success is going to look like. So it's a fairly generic theory. But what I really wanted to talk with you guys about is what is the real world application of this? And the first thing is that I cannot overstress is measuring in cohorts and ratios. So your cohort is, you know, the full user base that you might have on your service, and looking at the distribution and the reach within that full user base of the action that you're trying to measure. It's very, very tempting to measure in actuals because it's the obvious, easy one to go and answer. And so what we talk about here with actuals is vanity metrics, the kind of things that make us feel great. You normally get a really quick uplift off it, but it is fundamentally the wrong way to go about it because it's very easy to influence and it's very easy to take the wrong read from. So if we take the example of a dating app, the kind of obvious jump out KPIs that you might say, right, this is how we're going to measure if we are doing a better job. Number of contacts sent. So the number of people that are sending messages to each other on that platform. The number of profiles viewed. If more people are on my platform and they're looking at people on here, we must be doing a better job because they're engaging on there. And the number of searches that they're performing, you know, per session. Or the number of people that are signing up. These are all the kind of things you think, yep, fantastic. Everything is moving in the right direction. When you talk to the wider business, they're the kind of things that you can point at and say, we're doing a wonderful job. The number of emails that have been opened or the number of clicks that we see on push notifications that we're sending out to users, even down to how many people are taking subscriptions. Now, they're all good things, but as a product manager, I could make all of those green for you whilst at the same time doing irreparable damage to your product. And when I say I can make all of them green for you, that would be in a very short period of time before everything starts to slide. And so, you know, just to think about those, what we should be doing is measuring cohorts. Because if we look at these, number of contacts sent, well, let's just put contact buttons everywhere. Or number of profiles viewed, well, let's just reduce the amount of information that we put at the snippet level of a profile to force the user through to look at it. Okay, they're looking at more profiles, but that's just because it's annoying because you're not giving them enough information up front. And so it's that kind of mentality that you need to think about to say, am I looking at the right things? The number of searches that are happening, well, then maybe they're searching more because they can't find what they're looking for because your search isn't working. And there's the sort of the nirvana of the user signs up, performs one search, views one profile, sends one message and finds love. That's the happy state that you would love to. You're never going to find it, but that's the dream. And so making more of everything else, maybe they're opening more emails because the marketing team have used a bit of creative license on the subject lines that they've put, and everyone thinks it's a direct message from someone when in fact it's just them playing with you. So all of this, it's kind of just to articulate that if you look at things on an actual basis, there's fallibility to it, because you also don't know what else is happening. More people are paying. Well, that's because those guys over there have changed their pricing and have made everything really cheap or are running a summer promotion. Doesn't mean the product side, we've done a better job. And if you take any of them in isolation, it exacerbates the issue. And this is a really common thing that happens when you're doing A/B testing, is that they will go and they will optimize the contact page to make it as engaging as possible. And they'll come up with a set of variants around it and find the winning one. And then they'll look at profiles and they'll try different ways to say, okay, how can we drive users through to look at more profiles? And they'll test that. And then they'll come to the next piece, which is the sign-up form and the checkout basket, and optimize that. And then you step back from it and you realize that you've created a Frankenstein, because it isn't end-to-end. It isn't looking at that entire journey. And so when you're thinking about cohorts, they're the same metrics, but asked in a different way. And so here we're saying, okay, are more users engaging with the service over time? So when you're looking at your cohorts, it's about not just is there more engagement, is more search happening, it's is it distributed through my user base? Are more users resonating with the service? Are more users sending or receiving at least one message? And so that's a very different question to saying, are we sending more messages? Because more messages could be that I facilitated spamming on my platform, and you've just got a very small group of users that are just blasting that platform, or you've created a favorites mailing list function, and you've got your Dave, who doesn't really care that much and who's just hitting everybody on that dating service, and completely skewing your results. And so asking in a cohort structure flattens it out. Is the ratio of searches to contacts improving? So that is a true measure of whether search is working, because users are contacting off the back of it, i.e. they are finding what they are looking for. The ratio of contacts to replies, I'm sending the right message to the right person because that matches there, because there's a two-way interaction going on. And ultimately, we often forget to keep asking ourselves the question of, fundamentally, what are we here for? In this scenario, are more users finding love on our platform? Are we answering that question, and are we delivering that core service? The core service shouldn't be we exist to drive up specific KPIs. We are here for whatever that reason for that service is. RoomGo, it is, are more people finding a place to live on our platform? In this dating scenario, are more people finding love? And in turn, are more people loving our service for it? And when you look at whether people are loving the service that we're providing, that is around net sentiment in the market. Positive referrals, when the kind of the organic metrics that we all chase to give us that indication that what we are doing is working. So the next one, blending user feedback and NPS scores. Now, I'm never going to stand up here as a product person and say, don't listen to the user. It's vital that we listen to what users are asking us. But we have to ask it again in the right way. Because NPS, so your net promoter scores, and user feedback is probably one of the most commonly used KPIs for people to prove a point. And you can probably prove polar opposites of the same point by just sampling a slightly different segment of your users. So when you look at your net promoter score, which is the overall net, whether you are positive from your users that are advocates for your brand versus your detractors, or your customer satisfaction scores, or a more targeted questionnaire, you really have to be careful about what it is that you are asking for. Because as a user, satisfaction should always be a blend of everyone. Because as you move through the journey on the platform, users will be at times really, really happy, really, really sad, and frustrated. I come onto this dating app, I sign up, that was really easy. I love your brand. I do lots of searching and contact lots of people. I'm still pretty happy with this service. And I don't get any replies, and so now I think you're rubbish. And then I get that first response back, and now I like you again. And then maybe I find love and stratosphere. But it's about making sure that you are asking a full subset of your users across the entire journey, aggregating that score. And being, it's too simplistic to just ask people at the end. And so the people that you really need to think about, and we work very hard on the product front to try and answer this question, is the silent majority. The people that just bounce off your platform at some point in that journey and don't stick around long enough to ever get to your questionnaire that you ask them at the end of the journey. And so then it's about, okay, looking at your funnels, looking at your user journeys, looking at the drops in page views, or, you know, the traffic that's moving through your service, to try and see, well, where did I lose them? What was the moment? What was the thing that caused that user to just disappear and never come back? And what tends to happen is that we just ask at the very end, you go through your whole journey on our service, and eventually you go and you say, okay, I deactivate my account. And we say, okay, great, have you found what you were looking for? And at that point, it's either yes or no. But most people don't bother to do that. You really are sort of weighting that towards the yeses, because those are the only people that stick around long enough. And so you cannot use it as a true indicator. And this is where you then start to look at things like heat map tracking, you know, time on page, where it is that users are actually engaging, and you ask without asking, because then you get a truer answer. And we all look at TripAdvisor, and you get, or Amazon when you're shopping, and it's either 5 stars or 1 star, because you've got a polarized group of users at the end, and it's either loves or rants. And what you're trying to find is the middle, because those are the users that you can convert into advocates for your brand. And so when projects come to you, and you can spend ages over-engineering your footer, because the SEO manager says, I need a great footer with all of these links that are going everywhere, but it doesn't actually add any value to the user. And so it's time that is wasted on the service. And so you can look at things like Hotjar or Clicktail, and there's a lot of sort of plug-and-play services out there now that will do this for you, to try and infer that learning that you cannot get from asking. And so you have to take this blended qualitative data to balance against the quantitative cohort metrics that you're measuring. And then the last, KPI lifecycle planning. This is a personal bugbear of mine. It drives me absolutely crazy. And this is around looking at orphaned data and historical comparison. And we tend to do a fantastic job of understanding what the issue is, understanding what the user wants, how we're going to get there. And we don't look at the life cycle of the KPIs and the data that we want to use to measure whether it's been successful. And what can often happen is that I have, you know, project managers or product managers that will say, okay, great, we've made the change, and has it been better? Oh, well, I can't actually compare against what it was like before because we've overwritten that data, or we ran a database breaking change that updated that content. Or an example might be that if you're recording when users log onto your platform, so that in any one day I can come along and I can say, right, how many users have we got active on the site? Because we can look at the last logged in dates of all of our users, and we have that information available. But that data overwrites. So the next day I can't then say, well, how many did we have yesterday? Well, I don't know, because lots of those users that were there yesterday have now been here today, and that's updated that date value. And so when you then say, okay, so before and after, we've had 2 weeks since we made that change. Let's compare the 2 weeks before to the 2 weeks after. Did you take a delta of that database extract so that we can say a like-for-like comparison? No, we didn't do that. Right. This is planning for the data longevity is often overlooked. We lose data, it gets overwritten, we don't fully understand exactly what it is that we plan to do. We don't agree up front how we're going to infer whether something is better or worse. If you're taking that, to go all the way back to the car at the beginning, maybe that was one form. That user just had to scroll down and answer their questions and submit. Well, we've broken it up into lots of different stages. Okay, fine, but is it better or worse? Well, I don't really know, because we haven't agreed how that funnel is going to compare. We haven't agreed what the KPIs are that we're going to infer the same performance level. And so that is the kind of thing that you need to plan upfront, and you need to make sure that's documented. And in the run up to making a change, you need to say, are we storing everything so this is available so that we can compare before and after? Are we making sure that the baseline that we're using is stable and the integrity is there? Don't push 2 changes and then go, okay, well, did change A work? Well, I'm not sure, because change B also impacted the baseline. And you never want to be in a position where you have to roll stuff back and say, oh, we don't know, we can't measure it right. Turn off one of those features. Because by that point, you've lost that window of opportunity that you had in that first moment that users came to your site and it was different. And how did they react to it? That's gone. And you're never going to get it back, even if you turn it off and turn it back on a week later. And so it's making sure that you agree and you protect that and you communicate out to think all the way back to where product sits in the business. You need to go around every team and say, this is what's happening. Here is the lead time. Make sure that you don't go and do something. Don't change the prices because we are making a change and we want to make sure that we're looking at it in a controlled environment. So you can use A/B testing here. You can use feature toggles in specific markets to try and ensure that you have that in place. But too often, especially when you're in a sprint cycle where you're releasing every couple of weeks, there's a temptation to just push a bit more stuff out because it's ready and you want it to go out. And then guess what happens? You've pushed too much, you've overextended, and you can't make clean, quick learnings. The other thing as well to just factor in here, when you're looking at your traceability matrix, you will have unintended consequences. You will, be with the best intention, be trying to make a change. But if you haven't said, okay, what are the possible other outcomes that we may not be aware that we have done, that somebody needs to be watching to make sure that we haven't accidentally caused a problem somewhere else? Because we tend to just sort of operate in this kind of, excited bubble about whatever it is that we are pushing out, and nobody's saying, oh, but actually, messaging has dropped. Or, yes, we're now whizzing users through this car posting process really quickly, and we looked at what were all the fields that were there, and we stripped some of them out because no one was really answering them, and it was a small niche group, and we didn't get rid of that. Get them through that funnel. But maybe there was a small group of users that absolutely loved whatever it was that you took out. Whatever that field was, analog radios in cars, I don't know, it could be anything. But there was a small group of users that loved that and they searched on it and it was important to them and they blogged on their little community forums about it and they were advocates for your brand and you just unintentionally killed that. And so it's about always stepping back at every moment and saying, okay, has it been successful for its initial, sort of what you call a kind of critical path KPIs of exactly what was it we were trying to do? And have we made sure that our cohorts at a high level aren't moving? Okay? You have to focus on the bigger picture. You have to always be looking at, okay, those cohorts that we've got in place, we've gone end to end on our user journey. We've done our traceability matrix and we understand what are the potential things that we may knock on. We've looked at our cohort trends. We know which direction they're moving. We know what we can expect to happen. We're measuring at a robust level where we are confident that small activities won't impact too much what we're doing because there were no vanity metrics in there and we've checked it. And we've had a little session where we've tried to brainstorm the different ways that we could break those KPIs. And it's quite an interesting exercise to do, to say how robust are these. We've captured the data beforehand, those leading indicators. We've made sure that we have a strong cutover plan. We haven't overextended. We haven't pushed out too many features. We've tried to do things one at a time, so the best of our ability, and it's not always possible. I appreciate that. We've recorded when we made those changes so that it's always going to be there to infer and look back at. And we know over time that we can continue to watch how those cohorts are moving against expectation. And the baseline, you always have to go back to that baseline and say, am I confident, am I comfortable that we're taking a clean read in here? Because it's so easy to push something at the wrong time just purely because it's ready and you want it to go and the energy is there and the momentum is there and the dev team are super excited because they've built it and it's good to go and you've told the marketing team and they've pushed an email. But if it's not the right time to do it, you have to be mindful of those trends. And it goes all the way back to when you were first approached with a challenge or a problem. Say, okay, when do you need it? Is there a time frame that we're trying to deliver this thing? Because you know that something in that baseline trend is going to move. And if for Roomgo, it is that the students are all going to want to find a place to live on our flat sharing platform. And they're all going to want to do it in the last 2 weeks of August because that's when everybody does it. Well, if my solution is not going to land until the middle of October, then it's the wrong solution. And that is around looking at the expectation, but also that baseline trend to make sure that you're delivering in a stable moment for your brand. One of the really, really great things about product is that everybody is interested in product. It's because you're touching every single area of the platform. Yes, you're the product manager, but it's everybody's product. And everybody is always interested in the KPIs, the performance. And a big part for me of the role of a product manager is to tell the story to the wider business and to bring everybody with you on that collective direction and journey of what you're trying to do. And it's incredibly frustrating sometimes when I see product people stand up, I give a presentation, and they just dive into, you know, the real nitty-gritty minutiae of the KPIs, when actually it's about saying, who is my audience? What is the relevant message that I'm trying to give to them to get them excited, get their buy-in? Because on the product, you need a lot of buy-in. You need a lot of support from people, because, you know, it's about spinning plates, and it's about bringing people with you. It's about juggling the priorities and the backlog of the work that needs to get done. And so when you're talking about impactful product KPI changes, it's about the critical path. What are the KPIs that you started out with? What is the high level numbers that you can offer up that is going to get people excited? Product people tend to take all the glory, because that's the benefit of being a product person. You get to stand up and take credit for the dev team's work normally. And so it's about taking those people with you, because, you know, they are ultimately the facilitators that are making it happen and making sure that it goes out correctly and is well supported. And so it's feeding back to them to say, did it work? It's about going to your moderation team and saying, I know you wanted this AI-powered amazing moderation system and you wanted to bundle in some sneaky other stuff with it along the way. But actually, and you didn't get that, but look what we have got. What we have got is a net sentiment score that is positive. You guys have got X percent of your time that is now freed up because you're not spending it manually moderating listings. We can see overall that the engagement of our entire cohort is lifting. And we can see that more people are buying cars on our service because they're finding what they wanted. And yes, within that, there are all sorts of little nuances to it. And that multi-step funnel may have all sorts of quirks and pieces, but you don't need to bog everyone down with it, because they need to come to you and trust that you have the holistic view of everything. And we can forget that they don't have it. And as a person who has gone from being a product manager and head of product into business, you know, I thought, well, I can't be the GM, I can't be the MD, I don't know anything about finance and marketing and all of these other areas. But actually, by being a strong product manager and interfacing well into different teams and bringing those people with you and working with them from the beginning all the way through to the end, and not just dropping them halfway and excluding them halfway through the funnel and not sharing back out those KPIs, what you build is a trust. You build a sort of an engagement that they want to come with you on where it is that you're trying to take them. And you might think that you are maybe going overboard with the amount of positive reinforcement of reaching back to each team and saying, oh, well done, guys. And you know, you guys, this is working. And here's the latest update. And don't forget those KPIs that we were looking at a while ago. Well, the lagging indicators are still showing that we are still on that path, and that everything is a compound contribution towards that high level strategic KPIs that the business wants to see. And actually, I can tell you that it does work. It's not always easy, but it's about making sure that you have, you know, the correct integrity around your KPIs on the product side. So that's what I just wanted to share with you today.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.